This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Tech Talk and my name is Jeff Sandhu. And let's talk about money. In the digital age, we have things like bitcoins and digital cryptocurrency, mobile wallets, all those kind of funky stuff. But cash, physical cash, is something that is still used widely today. Not just here in Southeast Asia, but the world itself. And a new service is now at play that borders the digital world and the physical cash. And I'm here today with the founder and the CEO, Hari Sivan of SoCash. Hari, welcome to the show. Tell me first about SoCash and, you know, how did this all start?
Thanks, Jeff. SoCash was started in 2016, mid-2016, trying to solve a very simple problem, access to cash. So we are based out of Singapore. We are basically a bunch of bankers who were going through our routines about queuing up, in ATMs or, you know, driving to find the nearest ATM, so on and so forth as part of our weekly routines. Then there was this moment of enlightenment because ATMs are pretty expensive for banks. But as bankers, we know the numbers. But we figured out that the banks are probably looking at it in the wrong way. They keep expanding ATMs. They rent a place. They put up a new machine. Then they put up a security guard, so on and so forth. Every time someone withdraws money, you know, bank actually bears the cost of replenishing the money because ATMs require money to be reloaded. So we thought that, hey, when cash is floating all around us, the cash is, let's say we are in an office, our floor typically has a few hundred people, everybody has some cash is actually floating around us, why not make a simple peer-to-peer solution where we can exchange cash with people who we know and people who we don't know, which means that we won't have to go down to the ATMs as frequently as we do. So that was how, you know, SoCash was born. The idea was to make cash social and peer-to-peer. And we kind of iterated on the idea. We wanted to put a business model around it. And in May 2016 is when we actually came out with a product, which is essentially a platform that matches demand and supply of cash at a specific location. So let me explain how that works. The idea is we all withdraw cash from ATMs and then we spend it, let's say, at shops, grocery shops, food courts, so on and so forth. And these are typically small value transactions. At the end of the day, all these businesses, you know, have a lot of cash because that is how their business has been transacted. Now, they have to actually go and deposit this cash into the bank. And again, you know, the bank gets involved in collecting this cash, bundling, cleaning and all this stuff, which is typically, technically known as cash circulation, cash logistics. So we said, hey, let's just make more and more people exchange cash, let's say, at the shop that they spend. So if I'm spending cash at, let's say, the mini mart downstairs, the next person who may actually need cash can actually go down to the mini mart and collect cash that he needs instead of queuing up at the ATM. Of course, there is a technical backend which is required to, you know, to enable the settlement of funds, and that is what our platform does. So we have built this platform. We showcased this to the regulators in Singapore last year. We showcased this to the banks to say, hey, why don't you actually consider alternatives to setting up more and more ATMs because, ATMs are expensive. Cash management is expensive. And there was a due diligence process that was carried out by multiple parties in the industry. And, you know, by end of November, that is when we were awarded the Monetary Authority of Singapore's grant to commercialize the product in Singapore. So we have gone through that whole process of engaging industry stakeholders, regulators in Singapore. And we are in the process of commercializing this platform. So when it goes live, what it means is that every shop or every small shop in residential neighborhoods in Singapore will actually become ATMs, which means that banks can cut down on the traditional ATMs. And the overall benefit is that as the cost of cash logistics goes away, it is highly likely that banks will actually pass these benefits on to consumers. So hopefully the industry will become much better, for the society as a whole, in terms of lower fees, better efficiency, and so on and so forth.
And I find it surprising that you mentioned, you know, it's hard to find cash these days, and especially when, you know, you're based in Singapore. Is this something of a problem in Singapore, or something that you're looking outside of Singapore, you know, places in, you know, Indonesia, for example, or Vietnam, or those areas in that sense?
So you're right. So Singapore is pretty efficient. It's a small place, and it has a large number of, you know, ATMs. But even in Singapore, the numbers from MAS show that there are like 20 million cash withdrawals a month, amounting to $5 billion. And up like over 60% of the transactions are actually completed in cash. So which basically means there's a lot of usage of cash, which is why banks have to, you know, keep running this network. However, you also see, you know, queues in front of ATMs, you know, especially in the train stations and the MRTs and so on. Mm. So there is a huge demand of cash because that is the transaction behavior. And, you know, that is displayed, you know, in terms of the long queues that you see in front of the ATMs. So there is indeed a mismatch in terms of demand and supply of cash. But if you go to markets beyond Singapore, you're absolutely right. The problem becomes much bigger. So in markets like Indonesia, in you know, in neighboring markets, you know, more and more people are actually coming on, you know, getting connected to the financial system and starting their consumption journey. You know, as people get out of the poverty scenarios, and their consumption journey will get transacted, you know, at the beginning in cash. So there is a huge strain that is coming on existing ATM networks, even though there are thousands of them, let's say in Indonesia, Malaysia, Vietnam, the current infrastructure is actually creaking. And you can see that the banks are looking at solutions and alternatives. You know, some of them actually impose charges. I suspect in Malaysia, if you use the wrong ATM, not your bank's own ATM, then, you know, you have to pay, I think, 1.6 ringgits or 2 ringgits per withdrawal. So that's like the transaction fee. In Indonesia, I think it's around 6,500 to 7,000 rupiah. So there is transaction fee. Mm. In India, it's much higher. So banks are actually penalizing people, you know, in terms of, or, you know, they call it a fee, but essentially it's a penalty that you're using the wrong ATM and trying to recoup the cost, because they are always under pressure to increase the number of ATMs. And ATM, the moment you set up an ATM, your cost just keeps going up, because you now need to keep loading cash, you know, every time it runs out of cash. So actually, the problem becomes much bigger in larger economies, not, you know, and there's a huge amount of wastage. So one thing I missed out to tell you is, you know, when cash sits inside ATMs overnight, that's actually a lot of liquidity for the banks that, you know, they cannot deploy in terms of loans and financing. Mm. Now, in Singapore, there are 3,000 ATMs. So, you know, there is an amount that sits inside. But I guess if you look at Malaysia, Indonesia, you know, the number of ATMs are much bigger. Number of banks are much bigger. So the amount of cash that sits idle in ATM are a huge drain on the economy. So ideally, this cash can actually get deployed in more productive ways by the banks, which helps the economy. So you're absolutely right. The problem is much bigger in markets which are where there is growing demographics, where people are getting connected to banks. You know, the financial inclusion terms, you know, financial inclusion programs are kicking in. But it's not a small problem, even in a small market like Singapore. It's a big problem for banks, even in Singapore.
Yeah, I'm speaking to Hari Sivan. He's the founder and the CEO of SoCash. And we'll talk more in just a moment. This is Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
This is Tech Talk, and my name is Jeff Sandu, and I'm speaking to Hari Sivan. He's the founder and the CEO of SoCash. Hari, you explained early on, you know, how you kind of saw this problem because you were in the financial background itself, and you saw this opportunity. But to do something like SoCash instead of doing, you know, something maybe like a mobile wallet or, you know, a digital currency and so forth, which is, it seems to be picking up in, you know, places like Singapore, in Malaysia, in Indonesia, we're using our mobile phones to make payments instead of going to ATMs. Why did you feel that, you know, there needs to be something where it still relates to cash in a world where we're using our smartphones to do everything?
The simple answer is cash as a product is extremely efficient, especially for low-value payments. And so let me just explain. If when you make a cash transaction, let's say I'm at a food court and I'm paying for my lunch, You know, I pay, let's say, 10 ringgits for my lunch. So the exchange is instantly settled because I pay the merchant. He gets 10 ringgit immediately. There is no fee involved. There is no hardware required. And there is universal acceptance. But if you look at any of the other options that you mentioned, it would fail in, you know, in one or all of these criteria. So if I, let's say I use a credit card, you know, that's the stupidest thing I would do because I'm now using the most expensive payment instrument in terms of the interest rate and I'm taking unsecured loan. But more than that, if I pay $10, you know, that's the cost of the stuff that I'm eating. The merchant actually gets only, let's say, 970 or something because there is a concept of merchant discount rate, which is what the merchant actually pays to the card company or the bank. Now, merchants being smart, they actually pass it on to the consumers in some way, you know, so the overall cost of the $10 stuff actually becomes, let's say, 10, 20 or 10, 30 eventually. That's again bad. When I pay using, let's say, a card, then, you know, it takes a couple of days for the money to actually reach the merchant. Now, again, whereas cash is like instantly settled, right? So if I give $10, you know, the transaction is completed instantly. The third one is for, let's say, mobile wallets, mobile, like, you know, Apple Pay and all that stuff. You actually need terminal. You need to set up hardware, right, for the transactions to work. There is, again, a cost involved. So if you look from a pure product perspective, there is a reason why cash is still the king. And the reason is it's a superior product that is iterated, you know, over centuries, you know, and has become quite efficient. Now, why did we choose to work on this area? As bankers, we know that this is a big enough challenge. You know, after spending 15, 16 years in the industry, you know, we basically have been through this journey about, you know, creating wallets, launching wallets, creating alternative payment systems. Then we realize that there's a reason why it's called alternative, because primary is still going to be cash. When we looked at the market, we realized that the cash logistics, you know, as per the research article that was published by NCR, which is one of the largest ATM manufacturers, the cash logistics business is currently $300 billion globally. And it's fairly standard because ATMs are fairly standard. The market is big enough and it's standard. So as a product or as a business, we were looking at a very big opportunity with practically no fintech competition. So we do have competition, but that's from companies who currently build ATMs. You know, there are like five or six of them. Then there are these cash logistics companies who move money and, you know, bundle money, basically move money from the bank to the ATM, so on and so forth. You know, we always felt that if the opportunity is big, if the competition, you know, is pretty old, we have a better chance of developing a great product. And we saw all that coming together now because the millennials, customers, are actually shifting more and more of their banking needs to mobile. So if you could create a product that enables access to cash via mobile rather than, you know, putting these cards in machines and all the stuff, we saw it as a credible opportunity to start. As we, you know, did a deep dive into the market, we realized that cash circulation can actually, you know, be a technology-driven platform. So our product roadmap, you know, started with cash withdrawal, and that is what banks are trying out in different markets. But, you know, there is a huge opportunity in terms of, you know, other transactions like cash deposits, cash conversion, and so on and so forth. So we were kind of staring at a huge opportunity, less competition, enablers in place, you know, and that's kind of three key points for us to chart our corporate lines and get onto, you know, making cash more efficient.
And I think, you know, at the end of the day, cash does give you that sense of security. I mean, I've just been doing a bit of travels, and the one thing that I always do is to, you know, go and visit a foreign exchange, a money changer, to, in order that at least I have, you know, a few notes, physical cash in my wallet. Despite, you know, I have credit cards that, you know, can do overseas transaction. I've got debit cards that could do that. The same thing, I, you know, I've got Samsung Pay and all these mobile wallets and stuff. But, you know, once I am sort of run out of physical cash, it sort of, you know, makes you feel a bit unsecure of, you know, of your daily doings and so forth. I guess cash gives you that sense of security, and that's why I think it's still important in the digital age then.
So, you know, I totally agree with that. And, you know, I think there is a little bit of a problem in the narrative. There is no conflict between digital and cash. So cash is essentially a transaction mechanism, whereas it's just like, you know, any other value exchange mechanism. So just because it happens using paper, you know, doesn't mean that, you know, that, you know, it is not digital, because each cash transaction actually, you know, is backed by, let's say, if on SoCash, each cash withdrawal is actually backed by a digital payment. Mm. The authentication happens, you know, on mobile. So I do think that there is a problem in the narrative of, like, you know, cash is vintage, cash is non-digital. Essentially, what we are saying is consumers actually use multiple payment options, what works best for them. So that has been the learning. If you talk to bankers, this is what typically consultants won't tell you, but the bankers will tell you that consumers actually, you know, split their wallet share depending on a lot of factors. And it's not easy to say, okay, one particular mode of transaction, you know, should be the primary way, because there are different drivers, you know, when we make those choices. For example, you probably use a credit card simply because you are driven by the loyalty program, you know, in Malaysia. But when you travel out, you might be using a different credit card because you think that, you know, that particular bank actually offers you better security compared to the other bank. Because there's always a concern of what happens if my card gets skimmed, you know, or I lose my card details, right? So there are multiple things going on. It's a pretty complex problem to solve, and it's quite illogical to say that, you know, it's like a singular option which will be the future. It is very unlikely. You mentioned about mobile wallets. There are different types of mobile wallets. So Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, those kind of stuff are essentially a reflection of a credit card, because you still have to load your card. Mm. But there are those other wallets, you know, which actually will die. Because things like, I don't know about Malaysia, but like you top up, you know, a wallet with cash.
Yeah.
Then you can use it for something else. But essentially, again, you know, you're topping up from your account or with cash. Mm. So these kind of business models have never really, you know, scaled. Typically, they end up calling themselves digital banks, or, you know, they create, you know, like pen trackers and all this stuff. But very rarely, actually, I haven't seen any any case, you know, which actually has got mass adoption.
Let's talk about SoCash in terms of the consumer side. So how do I go about it? It's an app that I download, and what happens then? How do I go about it? And as a merchant, what do I need to do in order to enable SoCash to be, you know, present in my shop or my restaurant or my cafe, for example?
We have two models. So one is B2B2C, which is basically the bank actually enables the transaction. And the second one is the consumers download an app. So we're still working on the second. We need to fine-tune some of the stuff involved. But the basic step is we can only... So because we are dealing with payments and cash transactions, we need to have bank as enablers, and we need to have regulators on board. So that conversation has happened in Singapore, and we are working on the other markets in ASEAN right now. So unfortunately, you know, can't be turned on just like that. Mm. But the point really is, we actually work with banks, so you will find us inside the bank's application. So we work for banks, we don't disrupt them. The idea is banks actually run ATMs, and that's how, you know, the business model for SoCash has been created. That is, you treat SoCash as the smarter alternatives to ATMs. So the user experience is, let's say your main account is with Bank A, you are a mobile banking user of Bank A, you need cash, you open your mobile banking account or the app and say you need cash. Let's say you want 500 ringgits. You know, let's say that's your typical average, you know, withdrawal. The machine behind, or our engine behind, is smart, so it kind of learns what your behavior is, or what your preferences are, then compares with our network of shops who are tied up with us and lists down the nearest options for you. So it could be a convenience store, it could be a grocery store, it could be the store inside your condominium or nearby. Typically, the idea, the focus is on residential areas, because that is where most of the consumption happens for the mass segment. Mm-hmm. You select the shop that you want, what you like, you go down and collect the cash, because the shopkeeper is expecting you to come over. Mm-hmm. Now, when you exchange cash, when you have got your 500 ringgits, what happens is your account is debited and the shopkeeper's account is credited. And this happens instantly. You achieve two things. You got your cash at a place that is familiar. You know, in many cities, I've got feedback saying that ATMs are not exactly the safest or the secure places that, you know, people prefer. So now what we have done is we have said, as a consumer, you go to a place that you choose, you prefer, and you probably know the place very well. It's a social setting, so that's probably more secure. You have got your cash. The merchant has got additional footfall. So when you walk in, you know, he has an opportunity to sell something for you, let's say a box of candy, which is typically the most profitable item that the small merchants actually sell. And so he has actually given out 500 ringgits. So instead of physically going and depositing cash into his loan account or into his working capital account with the branch, it now gets automatically credited. So he gets more walk-ins, he becomes more productive. There is no concentration of cash in the shop because the cash just keeps kind of circulating. You know, he reduces his risk of, you know, robbery and all that stuff, which is quite common in many, many parts of Asia. Because if you have less cash, then the robbers won't come to you. So these are kind of the benefits, you know, that our business model is creating. So what we've put together is we have kind of matched the problems of the bank with the need of the consumer, with benefits for the shopkeeper. It's like a, you know, it's like a triangular relationship, and there is always something good for each of the participants in the ecosystem.
And are we going to see SoCash in, you know, Malaysia anytime soon?
Can't really comment on the timeline, but hopefully yes. it depends on how our discussions progresses with banks and the regulators. We are really excited about the Bank Negara's sandbox program. So there is some work involved to get it out. In other markets, we are having similar conversations. So it will take some time for the regulators and banks to get on board. But hopefully it should be done in a few months.
And it's tough, you know, in an industry that is, you know, highly regulated, but doing something disruptive as, you know, SoCash is doing, it's only going to, you know, bring positives, I guess, to the citizens of, you know, where you have presence with, I guess. I'm going to wish you all the best, Hari, and I'm going to be keeping a close eye when, you know, SoCash is, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later to have presence here in Malaysia. I've been speaking to Hari Sivan. He's the CEO and also the founder of SoCash. This has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.